Greer Epstein, Robert Herzog, Danielle Ballardinelli, and Elise O'Kane. Okay, did any of those names sound familiar? So I'm just going to guess that they probably don't. After all, none of them are public figures. They're not politicians, actors, actresses. None of them comprise roles on reality television. None of them have their names in magazines or newspapers. In fact, all of those names belong to ordinary citizens, people like you and me, except for one day, September 11th, 2001. Now, there's a day that probably none of us will forget, and we shouldn't forget. I always like to ask people, where were you at 8:46 a.m., September 11, 2001? That, of course, is the moment that the North Tower was struck. The South Tower of the World Trade Center would come under attack at 9:02 a.m. The passenger jets used in the attack were, of course, you'll remember this, Boeing 767s, each loaded with 15,000 gallons of jet fuel. Their impact measured a magnitude 0.9 on a seismograph. Just think about that. That's enough force to equate with a small earthquake. When all was said and done, some 2,800 people would lose their lives, including both the rescue workers who sought to save as many people as possible and the 157 people who were passengers on the two jets used in the attack. So the names of the people that I just read were not included in the death toll, even though each one was supposed to be in one of the two towers on that day. So what saved them? The answer, in one word, timing, or we might say good timing. So follow this. Greer Epstein was in Tower 1. He's an executive at Morgan Stanley. He had an office on floor 67. He received a note from a coworker. Hey, let's go get a cigarette, the note read. At exactly 8:40, he and the friend entered an elevator. Both felt a jolt on their way down to the ground floor. They didn't think much about it. Elevators in the World Trade Center had a history of acting up from time to time. By the time they walked out the front door of the building, however, the people outside were frozen in place, staring up at the fire and smoke billowing from a hole in the building. What neither of them could comprehend was the truth that a cigarette had saved their lives. Timing is everything. Then there's Herzog's story. I'll say it simply. He's alive today because he was running late. On a normal day, Robert would be sitting in his office on floor 96 of the North Tower by 8:45 a.m., but not this day. On this day, the Marsha McLellan worker had been up late after attending a dinner on the previous evening. His alarm went off at the right time, but his body didn't get out of bed. He simply couldn't. And by the time that he did, the train that he would normally take had left the station. So by the time he arrived at work, the first plane had already done its damage. Herzog was spared by sleeping in. Yeah, the next few minutes. Timing is everything. For Daniel Ballardinelli, it was changed plans. Ballardinelli's uncle, William Cashman, had planned a trip to Yosemite National Park. Cashman informed Daniel that he had spare frequent flyer miles for the flight, United Airlines 93, from Newark, New Jersey to San Francisco. So while he, Daniel, was excited for the trip, he ended up backing up at the last minute because of work obligations. Had he not, he would have been counted among the dead following the crash of Flight 93 near Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Timing is everything. Then there's Elise O'Kane, a United flight attendant. It was her intent to be on Flight 175, the plane that crashed into the South Tower. You know what saved her life? It was a clumsy keystroke. In August, 1 month prior to the disaster, O'Kane was entering her flight plans. She's an attendant into United's system. In the process, she accidentally inverted two code numbers. As a result, the system spat out a different schedule, and she was devastated. Instead of Los Angeles, her assignment would place her in Denver, and she wasn't happy about that. That is, until she watched the news. It's hard to imagine the horror that would have stirred inside of her when she realized that the flight she was supposed to be on, the flight that she wanted to be on, had crashed into the World Trade Center. It had killed every single crew member in the group with which she normally traveled and worked. A keystroke made the difference between life and death. Timing is everything. Of course, we all know the phrase well enough. Timing is everything. In fact, we use it in a number of different settings. When we tell a joke, we say, hey, timing's everything. Get the timing right, people laugh. Get it wrong, and the joke is on us. We may apply for a job at just the right time. Timing's often a factor in our employment. Timing matters in our relationships. There's a time in life when we're more open to starting a new relationship. There's times when we're not. Timing matters many times to our success or victory in a sport. We all know that timing matters, but what about in our relationship with God? So is there such a thing as spiritual timing? And if so, what is it? And to whom does timing belong, us or God? What does the phrase timing is everything mean in our walk with God? So in our podcast today, I want to pick up where we left off in our last episode. We're in Rome, 64 AD, and the persecution of Christians under Emperor Nero is in full swing. There's no doubt in my mind but that many of Jesus' followers, if asked, would indicate that the timing for their lives could have been better. Two words applied, if only. If only I'd been born 10 years earlier or later, my family would not be experiencing the pain of this time. Yet the question that stood above Peter's hearers, we're in the book of 1 Peter chapter 1, was, well then, what about God's timing? What does his timing mean? How does it fit into the equation of our lives? Today I want to explore that with you and what it means to say that with God, timing is everything. Let me tell you what got me thinking a little bit about our topic today. Just two words. The words are hatch, restore. Are you familiar with the words? Hatch, restore. I wasn't. It was November this past year. Christmas was on the way, and I asked my wife, so what do you think the grandkids want under the tree this year? So she paused for a minute, pulled out a list, and began to read. Most of the things on the list I understood. Clothing items, bath and beauty products, gift cards for various stores. And then these two words, hatch, restore. What is that? I said. So I did what any unknowing grandpa would do. I pulled out my trusty Google and went on to discover that these two words belong to, are you ready for this, an alarm clock. My grandkids wanted an alarm clock, but not just any alarm clock. No, this one is special, and it should be for the price. Look it up. The design of the technology is based on the circadian circuitry that God has hardwired into each of us as human beings, a circuitry that is triggered by light. Instead of emitting a loud sound to wake its owner, the hatch restore very gently introduces into the room a spectrum of light that increases intensity with the passing of seconds and minutes. Reading the reviews, I discovered the effectiveness of the alarm. Purchasers raved about the gentle way the alarm functioned to wake them into the day without jolting them with sounds of bells or other sounds smashing into one's eardrums first thing in the morning. Reading the reviews, I couldn't help but think about how the designers of this technology, simply put, found a way to align a need, the need to awaken, with something that God had already built into our bodies, a quite natural way of telling time, the circadian clock. That said, this discovery left me wondering, you know, we do a pretty good job at telling time, biologically, but how are we doing at telling time spiritually? Do we know what time it is, biblically? What's always fascinated me is the fact that when you study the scriptures, there are three essential terms utilized for understanding time. Each is different from the other, and each has spiritual significance. The words, of course, are chronos, aionios, and kairos. The first, chronos, what's the most familiar, points to exactly what it sounds like, chronological time, measured time, the time by which things here on earth are generally ordered. Last year, some 16 million wristwatches were sold in America. But far and away, the wristwatch is hardly the only device used for measuring time. In fact, over the course of history, there's been numerous devices engineered by men to measure chronological time. Think about it. The ancients who used a sundial to determine the time of day, A central gnomon cast a shadow from the sun to mark the passage of time. Or the Greek philosopher Eratosthenes calculated the Earth's circumference utilizing what? Another ancient timepiece, the obelisk. The water clock dates back to 1500 BC. The Chinese of Song Dynasty devised an incense clock. You could tell time and smell good all at once. And have you heard of the Merkhet? This was the ancient's device to answer the question of how to tell time at night when the sun went to bed. The device tracks the alignment and visibility of the stars using these to determine the movement of time. So today, and we know this, there's way too many devices to even name for telling time. From the high-tech devices that we wear on our wrists to nuclear clocks and even the atomic clocks that set and reset themselves via signals from a satellite. Pointedly, we live in an era where time consciousness drives people's lives patterns. And yet, I'm convinced when I read scripture that chronological time is the least important form of time mentioned in the Bible. I like to say it this way. God does not own a Rolex. He doesn't need one. In fact, he measures time quite differently than we do. If God had a time piece on his wrist, so to speak, it would not have a face surrounded by 12 numbers. It would simply say, quote, I'm quoting from Revelation 12, verse 6, there is a time and a times and a half a time, end quote. That's it. And that's our second word, the word Ionios. We might appropriately translate the word with our English term times or epochs. Biblically, this term is meant to measure the passing of historical periods. In its simplest form, our culture has traditionally measured millennium according to a single point, the birth of Jesus. Everything before the birth of Jesus has, at least during most of my lifetime, been referred to as time B.C. or before Christ. And everything after Christ has been referred to as A.D. or after the death of Christ. Of course, if you've noticed, this is changing. Modernity, in particular, modern academics and elites who want to remove anything religious from our culture's purview, have done so. Today, when you read academic books or articles, you are most apt to see the abbreviations not B.C. or A.D., but rather B.C.E. or C.E. Have you seen those? They're meant to remove any reference to Jesus the Christ. Here's what they stand for. B.C.E. stands for before, common era. So time is divided into two broad periods, history before the common era and that within the common era or CE, the common era, of course, equating with year one on the Gregorian calendar. When we're going to look at time this way, we might say that those of us living today are part of the third millennium CE or BC. So, question, how does that align with God's watch? I would suggest that the term Ionios, God's watch, would suggest that there really are only a few epochs that have and will pass in the whole of human history, dating back to creation and the Garden of Eden. The first Ionios is one that has already passed. This Ionios is the first period referred to on God's watch, and it comprises all of human history, from creation up to the birth of Christ. What our modern culture refers to as B.C. or B.C.E., the second period, or Ionios, is made up of several parts, thus it is referenced in the plural. Again, see Revelation 12:6. I would maintain that we're living in this period today. We are, this is my opinion, living in the last part of the Ionios referred to as times on God's watch. In modernity, we would simply say that we're living in the third millennium. Of course, modernity also predicates that time will continue indefinitely, although humanity does acknowledge that there are forces outside of our control that could bring time on Earth to an end, i.e. the death of the sun, projected 5 billion years from now. The death of the sun, however, and even the Earth do not negate, in modernity's view, the infinite nature of time. But here, God's timepiece is very different. When you read Revelation 12:6, notice that we move from the times that we are currently living into a half a time. There's a time and a times and then a half a time. The half a time is the last period of God's plan for humans on earth. Why? because it will precipitate the end, the return of Jesus, the recreation of earth along with the resurrection and final judgment. This period, the half a time, will be marked by a catastrophic beginning point, some event that will turn upside down the perceived control that humans believe they hold over earth, the universe, and life itself. Side note, I was really thinking about this recently. I don't know if you noticed this. There was a news report that surfaced involving Russia. The report aired Valentine's Day this year, February 14th. If you're watching it, you would have noticed that the story appeared voicing a concern by U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken. Blinken had conveyed to both China and India this concern. The concern that Russia has now the ability and the desire to launch into outer space a nuclear weapon with the capacity to knock out satellites. It's definitely a security concern. But I think it's more than that. I want you to stop for a moment and think about something with me. Just stay with me here. Just a couple of questions for you. How much money do you have in the bank right now? How much is in your 401k? If you have Social Security, what is the calculation of your monthly payment? Now stay with me. How do you know the answer to any of these? Well, you might say, I know because I have proof of what I have in each of these accounts. I can open my bank account online. I see what's in it. Likewise, the Social Security arm of our government keeps track of my payments. I can see them online. And the 401k, it's online as well. Okay, but what if I exploded several nuclear devices in outer space? What would happen? There would be no online anything. All of the satellites that make up what we call the cloud would be destroyed. You know what that would do to life here on Earth? On a global scale, it would throw human beings into a state of panic. We would have worldwide unrest and upheaval. So allow me to simply and rhetorically to ask the question, could such be the beginning of the third period indicated on God's watch? It could, couldn't it? Do I know that that's what's going to happen? Of course not. I'm simply hypothesizing, but my hypothesis is also grounded in fact. And another fact that I find fascinating is that Blinken was quickly silenced on February 14th. The single voice that makes up our associated media quickly swooped in with a narrative meant to disarm. All of the news outlets carried the same language to indicate that, well, Russia really does not have that kind of capability. I'm here to say, maybe they do, and maybe they don't. I don't know, and I won't know. I suspect they do, given Blinken's initial narrative to China and India, but I don't know. What I do know is that the half a time indicated in Revelation 12:6 will come. And when it does, the countdown to resurrection will begin in earnest. Life on this planet will change. That's how God measures time. Oh, and there's one more word for time that the Bible uses. This is the most important one. And it's the one given in our scripture today. It's the word kairos. We've talked about chronological or measurable time. We've talked about aionios, namely the watch that God wears. Now let's add one more word to our understanding, and the word is kairos. In the Bible, the word kairos is meant to convey the idea of God's timing for our lives, God's perfect timing. This is the word that most corresponds with Peter's words to us today. Allow me to return us to 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 5. The scripture we read in our last episode. As we come back to Peter's words, I want to remind you of our context. Peter's speaking to the church during a time, there's our word again, during which persecution is happening. If timing is everything, the Christians living in Rome are feeling like their lives are the recipients of bad timing, and I don't blame them. When you watch the people you love the most in this world experience the horrors of Nero, you can't help but ask the question, why, God? Why did you have to put me into this period of time? Why couldn't I have come into the world in a time when Christians were embraced and loved? You might even say to yourself, you know what, God, your timing stinks. But does it? I want you to listen again to the words Peter speaks. This is 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 3 to 5. Dear Lord, give us your insights. Quote, here's what Peter says. He says, he, God is in charge of timing, has caused us, to be born again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to an inheritance that is imperishable, undefiled, and unfading, kept in heaven for you. Now listen to these last words, verse 5. Who by God's power are being guarded through faith for a salvation, ready for this? Ready to be revealed in the last, wait for it, time. So you heard the last word. The word is time. Peter's telling the Christians, yes, you're being persecuted now, but even in the midst of persecution, God is guarding your salvation. It'll come in the last time. So the big question is, which word for time is used here? Is Peter speaking chronologically? Like God will guard your faith until the chronological clock strikes its end? No. It's not speaking chronologically. Is he referring to the last Ionios, or period of time in human history? It wouldn't be inappropriate for Peter to do so, except for this fact, that these Christians would not live in the last Ionios, or the half a time. We, those of us listening to this podcast, might, but they didn't. No. So, the word used here, you already know this, is the word kairos. I want you to listen to what Peter is saying through this lens. Peter's telling the Christians that even in the midst of persecution, God's timing for their life is perfect. You might say it this way, God placed you into this period of time very intentionally. In doing so, he's called you into his mission of bringing souls to know him just at the right time. So God's timing might not equate with your timing, but get this, his timing, not yours, is perfect. Rest in that truth. Now, I have to tell you, from a personal perspective, this is what I absolutely love about this word kairos. I have so often had to remind myself that whatever is happening in my life, if timing is everything, God's timing is perfect, even though I might not like it or feel it. I believe this scripture raises a couple of questions for us today before we close. Three of them. Question one. If God's timing is perfect, timing is everything, what does it mean to you that God has intentionally placed you into this period of time in history? Why now? What is his calling on your life for such a time as this? Think about that. Question two. Where are you right now struggling with God's timing? Here you might be saying to God, God, your timing stinks. You don't like what's happening in your life or the timing surrounding it. Where is that happening in your life? What do your conversations with God around timing sound like? Question three. Where are you not just struggling with God's timing, but you are, allow me to take this up a notch, actually in conflict with it? Said simply, you're working hard against God's timing. I'm asking this because I've actually learned something in my life. When God's times in our lives are not our times, we push back against God. And when we do, it causes us to be miserable. In fact, often when I'm feeling miserable about something happening in my life, I just stop and I ask myself the question, am I trying to force something that's not meant to be? I want you to think about those questions this week, and I'll tell you why. I really do believe that timing is everything. And I believe that God's timing is perfect. Well, that's it for today. I'll be praying for you and your family, and I'm going to ask that you pray for me and mine. We're in the middle of Lent right now and awaiting Easter, and oh, how I think about God's timing for the resurrection. So until next week, have a God-sized week.